In terms of the totality of the awfulness of the 3,000 people murdered, I suspect, I may be wrong, there are no ex-RUC widows here, and I won't ask them if they are to hold their hands up. But the point is, my determination was to do something. I respect your position. Your point about politicians taking responsibility, I agree entirely. I mean, we're violently agreeing. Unfortunately, you got me to ask tough questions of. You don't have politicians to ask tough questions of. I came here because it was important. You know, Mark asked me, and I didn't have to think twice. I didn't ask anyone. I said, yes, I'll be there.
Thank you. Let me say something which I know is, in view of all the hands that went up, is not going to be popular, OK? But I hope you'll believe me when I say that, you know, I speak as I find, OK? And I'm not disputing that in each and every one of the cases that, you know, you've expressed deep reservations about the intentions and the competence of the HET, that, you know, those aren't the real experiences you've had. I just want to say, why do I want to say this? I want to say it because I think it's true. I just want to say that it's true, limited experience of the HET officers that I have dealt with has been admirable, actually. I would say the officers that I've dealt with, and it's true that they're just, you know, two or three, so they may not be representative, but honest to God, these guys knew what was going on. They knew what was up, what was down, what was left, what was right. They knew exactly, you know, where the evidence was going, the right questions to ask, sensitive to the families. Or, well, okay, but all I can tell you is that if I'd lost a relative, I understand. I've, you know, done quite a lot of work on people who have lost relatives at the hands of the state. But I'm just going to say that I can only speak as I found, and I'm not disrespecting your own experience of this. Quite clearly, you feel, you know, impassioned about it, and I'm sure there's good reason for it. But I'm just saying that
I actually engaged with three teams,
right?
Three different teams, and the three of them were absolutely ridiculous.
Okay.
The three of them.
Okay.
Two reports was an absolute shambles.
Okay.
I was waiting on a third report, and it was supposed to come out and tell all the information.
Right.
No, listen, okay. There's a couple, there were two more people that were down for comments, and we'll try and take some more. Our questions, and it was Harry Maguire and Mary McCallan. I have no doubt, John, and our frontline staff that were dealing with HET and the critical engagement process, because families were going along on their own, were engaging with officers that were telling them, sitting in a room, definitely collusion. Absolutely, no doubt about it. We can prove
absolutely.
It. Telling them in relation to British Army killings, the clearest case of a killing we've ever seen, it is murder.
Absolutely.
But it will not emerge in the report. We will do what we can do, but it ain't going to emerge in a report. And I think that is a kind of a general snapshot of what people were being told. So people were engaging in a process, being promised this, being told across the table, but it didn't appear in a report. And that's the fundamental difference of the people, and I know that you have engaged with, in terms of genuine, decent cops from Britain, but powerless and hands tied behind backs when it comes to telling the truth. I think that's the nub of it. So can we go to the other questions? But it's what we do, and I know we shouldn't continue to have the conversation about what is there. It's where we need to go to with it and what's required. And I think we've kind of touched on that. It's how we move it on and how we constructively move it on for the interests of all families. So the next couple of comments, and we'll try and take some more, please.
Yeah, but if your father was an IRA volunteer, your review was totally different if he was a civilian.
No, and that's true too. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, Mark. Mark, my name is Harry Maguire. I'm a director of CRJI. And I suppose, like everybody else in the North, I have a past. I'm also a former combatant. But my sort of comment or question to Q is, and I've mentioned a number of occasions, and you're very welcome. You know, the politicians, there's a plague in all your houses when you mention politicians, but the politicians created the Good Friday Agreement. They ensured the beginnings of the PSNI. They created a new beginning to policing. And is there an understanding within the upper echelons of the policing, the PSNI, and the criminal justice system per se, is there an understanding that failure to deal with state murder undermines confidence in the new beginning of policing, and that failure to deal with this issue undermines everybody in this room and hurts everybody in this room? And I think you can see that it's a very, very live and very, very emotive issue. So when we talk about the past, and I hear people saying we should leave it in the past, I see dealing with these issues, dealing with the state killings, is actually protecting and building the future. And I think if the police dealt much more efficiently, effectively with these issues, they would see an increasing support and engagement on a daily basis on other issues.
Hi, Mary McCallan. I'm the advocacy worker for the Wave Trauma Centre. I know you've commented there just about the inclusivity of the event too, so I want to start off by saying that we are a cross-community organisation. We work with a wide variety of families who have been injured and traumatised and bereaved by a variety of actors across the conflict. And the client base that I would work directly with would represent people who have been affected by a lot of different actors within the conflict. My question, and I acknowledge that there are a lot of victims here today who have been victims of direct state violence, and I know that you have had particular difficulties in the processes that have existed, but my question is about cases where families have known or suspected that there has been collusion, and when they've gone and asked the HET about these particular allegations and about whether or not there has been collusion, there's been an unwillingness on the HET's part to come out and clearly state, yes, collusion existed. And there's been some quite high-profile examples of that. One of them in particular was the Miami Shoebomb murder, where despite the fact that they found that Robin Jackson had been at the scene, despite the fact that they found that he was a special branch agent, and despite the fact that they were willing to say that he had been tipped off about the investigation, the most that they would say was that it had raised disturbing questions about collusive acts. So it implies that there has been collusion, but it doesn't directly state that there has been. And I know that that has been an issue for families and some that haven't been able to come out and say publicly that they think that there has been collusion in their cases. I know whenever that's been challenged by myself and by other organisations that the HET has said that they don't apply the Stevens and the Corey definitions of collusion, that they have their own definition of collusion, but it's one that they've been unwilling to share with groups and with families. So my question is, why have they not applied the Stevens and the Corey definition of collusion? And where do we go in relation to those cases? Because families are really, really concerned about what's happening with those.
I don't know where, I mean, probably where else do you go? There's nowhere to go. On collusion, I'm surprised. There are thousands of definitions of collusion. I worked for Stevens Corey one, which is pretty seamless. And fairly clear, and I had no difficulty, we had no difficulty in Stevens saying, you know, there was collusion. And it's not a difficult thing against that definition to say. So I can't answer questions on individual cases, but the operating principle is if you find collusion and there is collusion, then you can make that point explicit. I don't see why one wouldn't. On the broader point around killings, I couldn't agree more. I was very clear, I can only speak for my time, the whole reason we started this conversation was around what are we doing about all these killings, because, you know, 2000 had never been resolved in any sort of legal sense at all, but it was all killings. And that's, in a way, I think, the broader looking forward argument. It's not, state killings are, as we said, they are different, because it's the state, the allegation of a state to kill the citizen. Of course, states are allowed to kill citizens in certain cases. Article 2 is very clear on that, but that needs to be, it's not an absolute right, but it's very important it's dealt with. But there are all the other killings, and I think, you know, where Eames Bradley was very thoughtful was around trying to get all the other people to step up to the same plate, or at least to get on the first step of that plate to try and resolve all those other issues. And I, you know, a bit of me thinks, I wonder why, you know, the fact it hasn't happened has made it quite easy for some players to step away from taking responsibility for the past in its broadest sense, be it Loyalist paramilitaries, Republican paramilitaries, you know, the criminal element, all the other bits of that awfulness, which I thought was dealt with in a very careful and thoughtful way in the totality of the Eames-Bradley report, which would have created a starting point for moving on and looking forward. And your point is, you know, we could, you can go on and you can continue to tell me that, you know, the HET was useless, you know, biased, cover stuff up, whatever you, your personal views are. I respect your views. Others have said or has indicated it added value. And I know I've met many families where it did add some value, but I draw cold comfort from that when there are so many people who are not happy. My frustration is we are continually talking about what has gone on rather than what happens next. What is it that a group, this group, for example, or people within this group, what do we need to do so the next conversation is not me flying over to have a conversation with John, but those in political responsibility are sitting up here collectively, together, to say we think we need to do something like in the next few months to take this forward, Mark, because I can't do, I can't, I have no locus, I can't deliver that for you. I suspect some people will not find my presence here terribly helpful. I'm not particularly fussed about that. What I'm interested in is what do we do, you know, if I can help or anyone, could, how do we get that conversation and get some energy behind it so it starts to address some of the very real issues that have been described in this room?
Yeah. There's just a couple of comments. One of them, we have a member of Amnesty International present who is talking about the report that Amnesty recently published about a single mechanism, and I kind of think it's around the Eames-Bradley HIU style of thing, and kind of get your view on that, because the British mechanisms have failed. It's an international person, not from Ireland, who's a member of Amnesty International. I don't know, Paddy, if you want me to read this out and bear with me. We have an academic here, Paddy Hilliard, and he's raising the issue in the 1980 and former system was put in place. This was described as illegal by De Silva. The HMIC didn't critique it. In 84, Stalker investigated 6 killings. He was recommended very suspicious circumstances, and the HET has been kind of critiqued by HMIC, thinks the point, and they didn't do it on that. And I know there are valid points too. Is there anyone else wants to make contributions or whatever? Sorry, I know I see a couple of hands. Yourself, gentleman here on the left. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Jerry Armstrong. Mr. Ware, I respect your assertion there that you met very many admirable men in the HET. You said admirable. I too met some very admirable HET investigative officers. My whole problem is at the start of this whole debate that you said that you never thought 40 years down the line you'd see all us in this room. Well, my point being that if there had been maybe more admirable RUC detectives, I'll just go back on a tangent. In 1974, RUC detectives visited our house, and they assured my father that they would leave no stone unturned in the search of the murdering bastards, was the words the detectives used in bringing these boys to justice. So my point to everybody in this room is, if my brother hadn't been killed, I probably wouldn't have been in this room. If RUC detectives had done their job 40 years ago, I and a lot of people would not be in this room addressing Mr. Ord and yourself. So what my whole thing is, it's not so much about people being killed in the state and collusion. It's as if we've suffered injustices all throughout. It's adding insult to injury. I for 25
Paul,
years...
Can you be brief, Jerry?
Right, I'll make it very brief. Please. For 25 years, like most families here, we never spoke. We just got on with our brother was killed. We accepted that, hard as it is. What I cannot accept, and I would just like to address this to Mr. Hugh Ord, I asked you a question several years ago, live on an Inside program about the HET. My problem is with this here, and would you agree with me how many stones have been overturned?
Okay. We, we are pushed for time for people to get the flights. Brenda, can you make a very, very brief comment? And I know Jim McCabe's here is going to have the very kind of last question. As brief as you can, please.
Right, my name's Brenda Downs, and my husband John Downs was murdered on the 12th of August 1984 whilst we were attending the anti-internment rally on the Andersonstown Road, which was a peaceful demonstration and turned into a police riot. And it was described by the world's media as a police riot. Now, to this day, like the people here, I was dealt with the Sapphire team, who only added more insult and injury to my hurt and pain by asking me what I thought my husband did, what he did that day. Was he drinking? It was very clear that the RUC attacked a peaceful demonstration. The casualties, when I got to the hospital where my husband was brought to, the Royal Victoria Hospital, had that many people through injuries through plastic bullets that they couldn't tell me where he was there or not. A lot of people had to be transferred to Musgrave. Now, not one person has been made accountable and convicted for that day, not only for his murder, but for the attack on the whole of the community. The RUC run amok. They battened people. They drove their Land Rovers at people. They didn't care. They acted with impunity. And to this very day, they are still acting with impunity. And I would also just like to say why I did come here today. Because like everybody has voiced the same hurt and insults through the HET Sapphire team, is because the RUC came to my home, raided my home, searched me on the streets because I stood up and said it was wrong. He was murdered. The lies that were told by Herman said he knew exactly what happened. It was a ricocheted bullet that hit him. No, it was not. It was proven by the television where he was shot at point-blank range by Nigel Haggerty, who I'm also still waiting on Freedom of Information Act into his death, which I've still been denied. And Tuesday is his 30th anniversary. I am now turning 50. I was 20 at the time. I will fight to my death, to my last day and breath, until I get truth and justice. I want a prosecution. I want those other RUC officers who were battening people, who the injuries that were inflicted on people, made accountable for their actions, because they have got away with complete impunity. And I also would like to just finish this point.
Quickly, please.
I want to finish this point by saying I still campaign for the banning of plastic bullets with the vigil last night. Yous are still using stockpiling. Yous are introducing tasers. Yous have brought in more weapons into your arsenal. People who do not agree with the status quo are lifted off out of their homes.
Brenda, I'm going to have to cut you. We are really running on time. People have to get planes. And we've put this to finish.
Finish this last point, because I've never had an opportunity. Because anybody who has ever come has come to my house and put themselves and went through my personal stuff. And I know people who this is still happening to. Anybody who stands up against this status quo are harassed and turned, locked up.
Okay, Brenda, there's so many families want to speak, and I appreciate totally how difficult and emotional this is and the investment in it, but it is, and I know it's not satisfactory and it's a short event and a short window. We do have a synopsis of how families feel, and I think it's important that's taken on board. We do have an issue in terms of there are questions and contradictions and how all this stuff's dealt with. We do have who did come here today, who did set up and try to make an effort at this, flawed as it is, and we've heard that. It's how do we get something that addresses this for families in this room and the families outside this room, to focus on a proper process that we can all participate in, and I think that's where we try and need to get this debate to, as we've agreed, but it's important that people hear the hurt that exists in this room, and people that are in this audience hear that hurt too. in terms of what they're determining to do about the future and about dealing with this issue. And there are no questions for John Ware, who's delivered, as we said, more justice, more truth for families through his programmes than has been through the processes. I think it is important to acknowledge that. Jim McCabe does want to say something, I know, about plastic bullets. And then we're going to, if it's really, really quickly, Jim, we're going to go to Dennis Bradley to kind of do the wrap up on this. So, you know, there's plenty of time for us to discuss afterwards, but in terms of people having to leave.
Well, having listened to what Brenda said, I fully endorse everything she said in relation to the use of plastic bullets, to the continued stockpiling of plastic bullets, to the addition to the armoury of the policing service of other weapons, which I would call weapons of mass destruction, because the massive injuries, deaths and hurt that they have caused is on a massive scale here. You have gone on record, Mr. Ord, as saying that you recognise that innocent people were killed by plastic bullets and rubber bullets. Yet, whilst you were in office, you made no recommendation that they be withdrawn from a police force that could not be entrusted with their use. You did not make any effort whatsoever to have these lethal weapons, which were responsible for the deaths of 17 people, 9 of whom were school children. The injuries which they caused range from blindness, brain damage, organ damage, crippling, and eventually leading to the premature death of many people, one of whom suffered for over 30 years from his injuries before he succumbed, leaving wife and children. I myself was left with 3 children, the youngest of whom was only 3 months, who to this day are suffering. You, in your present position, I think and I believe, can do more to have these weapons withdrawn. You said they should not be used during what you called that amateurish disturbance in London. To me, it was not amateurish. When life is lost, there is no amateurism involved. Indeed, the people who caused and murdered my wife were true professionals, professional representatives of a unionist government.
Okay. There's a few things in that. Maybe you could take a couple of minutes to respond to, and I know time is, and I know people have flights and it's tight. And I'm going to ask Dennis Bradley to come up now.
Thanks.